This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
All right, and speaking of coaches, let's go up Ford Center at the Star. Here's Mike McCarthy.
Two comebacks in the fourth quarter. You're getting your 170th win, the delay, all of the injuries and everything else you came up with. And the opponent, is that one of the more memorable regular season games you think you've been a part of?
I mean, definitely on a number of fronts. So, you know, I just think like anything, you know, going into the game, you know, we were watching the weather for the, you know, last 3 days doing the wet ball drills. And so you're always hoping the storm's going to miss, but, you know, then just the way it timed up. But I thought everybody just handled it so well. So there really was no, you know, the locker room was fine and everything. You know, we looked at the coin toss. We discussed that. That was part of taking the ball because we wanted to get out there and get going and not knowing what the weather was going to be in the second half. So all those little things behind the scene. So those are the stuff that I know I always appreciate, just the way people handle the little things. And I think you clearly got to give a lot of credit to the crowd. I mean, it's to come back out, you know, an hour and a half later or so, and that was like a 4 o'clock game or a 7. I mean, that just the atmosphere was incredible. I mean, the game operations. I mean, I think they got a new stereo system. You know, DJ was spinning it just right for all the old timers. The music was good. No, I mean, it was a really cool night. So the players were commenting on it today that we're in here. Just the energy. You know, just in the building. So obviously the excellent football game. You know, people, you know, just the back and forth. I think it's, you know, definitely a game I know I would have enjoyed watching as a fan. So, yeah, the whole night was awesome. I mean, it was just an incredible atmosphere. And, you know, and the weather, you know, definitely it worked out because we didn't have any issues after that. So, yeah, so many little things. I mean, just the game, too. I mean, there's so many plays in that game. I mean, there's a number of plays. You know, if one of those plays goes the other way, the outcome's different, you know. For as, you know, great as Dak played, and, you know, all the, you know, somebody had some big time throws with the, you know, the biggest play in my opinion that he made in the game was the fumble recovery. So, you know, those are the things you remember about these games. And then that's what the NFL is, you know, and that's what the Cowboys and the Steelers bring. You know, it's going to be a game that's going to go down the wire and had a lot of excitement to it. So, yeah, definitely very memorable.
Dak was saying, too, just how meaningful it was to be able to go with you over your house and the other quarterbacks and see that. Did you actually take them on a tour? Was it just, hey, let's just go?
It wasn't planned. The personal part of it's always, you know, fun to reflect on at the end. I had plans to go see my family, and then he had called the phone and text, hey, give me a call. You know, so naturally I'm thinking something's wrong at the hotel. And he said, hey, look at your phone. And then there's a couple pictures of him and the quarterbacks and the coaches there at the bar. And I was like, oh, my God. So I said, well, hell, if you guys want to swing by, swing on by. Because, you know, they obviously weren't very far away. So, yeah, some things that are not planned usually turn out to be, you know, a good time. So, and then so we actually just drove back to the hotel together, but we took the scenic route, you know, the great neighborhood of Greenfield. So they got to hear a few stories on the way home. So.
I'm Mike Todd Archer with ESPN. What time did you guys get home? Did you go to your house? Did you just come here? How'd you push the schedule back?
We pushed everything back an hour. You know, we were supposed to start at 11, so we just started at noon. So everybody just went and got home, you know, got 3 or 4 hours of sleep. And you know, all the players came in to get their lift in, so everybody's checked in, and, you know, it just stopped the training room. So, you know, the first evaluation process has been completed. So, we coaching-wise, we moved right on to Detroit. So we watched the game. You know, we tried to grade as much as we could on the plane ride home, but we had to get right onto the lines today. So that's what's going on right now.
And with Nealand, do you know when he will have the scope?
Don't have a total timeline, but yes, he's scheduled for a procedure tomorrow is the initial plan. So we'll see how that goes.
Do you need to go find some defensive ends? Seems like that's your position that's getting hit pretty good.
Just came from the training room, Todd. So one step at a time. Yeah.
Sod,
you said the Athletic. Mike, you spoke about it a little bit yesterday, but just getting the game ball in that moment, did you see it coming at all? What were your emotions when that kind of mentioned?
No, like I said, yeah. I mean, that's something that'll always be special, without a doubt. But no, to be honest with you, the first thing I looked at was the clock when I walked in there, and I said something to Zach. He goes, "Yep, it's 1:15." So I mean, that's kind of where my mind was at, because you worry about night games. It's because so much about those wins. You don't want it, or even if it didn't go that way, the travel's a big part of this. You know, just the planning of getting back and so forth. So that's really, frankly, was where my head was at.
Rico, with his game the way that he had, do you feel like this is something that he can carry forward as maybe the bell cow of the committee or something, or how do you look at his performance?
Yeah, I thought Rico played well. Obviously, we felt good about the way he was running the ball. I think the carries reflected that. So, you got to play the game. Play the game. I think the most important thing is, just the way we lined up him and Zeke, and the way we practiced throughout the week. Because, as a play caller, if you want to be a multiple personnel, substitution team and play at a high pace, you don't want to have to have every personnel group have the certain back into it. That's when it gets – and the same thing with receivers, because, you think the more that you do, whether it's personnel or scheme, but the more that you do, the more tendencies you create. So, and that's very, very – evident, and it has been in my time in this league, so it's something I'm very cognizant of. So the ability of just playing, whether it's by down and distance or by quarter, things like that, that's part of the rotation we're trying to get into. But I think the biggest thing too is I thought yesterday was our best game as a football team of complementary football. When the offense has the ball longer than the defense, that's a good thing, because then the defense on the field less time than we are. So we were up above 70 plays. We got a number of trips to a plate that were important. The ball was distributed properly. So those are the things that, were very important every week, let alone playing against Pittsburgh. So accomplishing that and, in running the football is a big part of that.
Scott.
I'm Scott Erickson with the AP. It's kind of been trending in Rico's direction in terms of the number of touches, et cetera, the last couple of weeks. Did you sense that might be how it went when the season started, with how the run game developed and the carries, or is it – surprised you at all the way that it's kind of played out over 5 weeks?
I mean, just as far as Rico specifically, nothing surprises me with him. I mean, he's always been an ascending player. I mean, if you go back through his career here, I mean, he really was just bad on injuries early. But you got to remember, one of the first times he got into a game, he returned a kickoff for a touchdown. So I mean, so I've always been impressed with Rico's production, based off of his opportunities. So his biggest challenge has just been staying healthy. So I think you're seeing, very bright, has a high understanding of everything that we're asking him to do. It runs hard. If anything, he just needs to maybe slow down in certain areas, and that comes with experience. So, and Zeke has been really good for him, because Zeke has all that experience. Zeke's been that guy that's carried the load and so forth. So that's a very healthy combination for us.
Speaking of Zeke and being good for him, he's obviously been that guy, and his carries have gone down. What have you seen from him as the opportunities have diminished, but his attitude and the way that he's approached things?
I think we're seeing the best of Zeke. I know in my time with him, he's a great teammate. He's probably one of the most popular players in the locker room. He brings great energy, each and every day. And, I think the last 2 weeks, as far as practice, and sometimes practice is, the games don't reflect on, what's going on in practice. But I think he's practiced as well as I've ever seen him.
Joe.
Joe Hoyt, All City Dallas. We've talked before about Jalen Tolbert's preparation and his note-taking. In a game like that where he has to, step up a little bit for Brandon Cooks, how does that preparation and note-taking really kind of translate to himself?
Well, you're just seeing it pay off. And I know it has to be personally very rewarding for him. I'm proud of him, and because no one deserves it more than he does. I mean, he's put the time in, he's put the energy in. Obviously, the way the game went, they clouded, they gave CD a ton of attention yesterday. So you know, there's opportunities for others, and he definitely took advantage of it.
Babe.
Babe Loftenberg, 105.3, the Fan. You talked about Dak not caring who's there, just going to turn it loose, but you as a play caller, you get into that final drive, and I think five different guys touch the ball, not including Dak, of course, but third and seven, Ferguson picks up your first down, breaks a tackle, all that. You throw a screen to your fullback. Mm-hmm. So I guess how gratifying is that for you that it's not just, boy, if we don't get the ball to this one guy, we're screwed?
It's the preference. You know, I'm at my best as a play caller when I'm attacking the defense and when I'm seeing from them. You know, you're trying to set up. You know, you're trying to set a course. Every time the defense has the ball, I'm trying to chart a course for the next series, you know, anticipating on what that situation is going to be. And frankly, the way that drive was going, Pittsburgh's offensive drive beforehand, and my whole thought was, hey, I'm going to take it nice and slow all the way down the field, be patient, keep him in clean plays. There's things that we were communicating that we felt that, you know, we could do, particularly in the run game. So we had a lot of clean looks running the ball. I thought the offensive line did an excellent job there. Rico ran hard. I was looking for the right spot to throw the screen. You know, it came a little later than I initially anticipated. You know, and that was well blocked, and Hunter, you know, had a chance to almost put that in. So, yeah, so that's when you're at your best, when you're not worried about other things and you're just clearly in a rhythm. And you're keeping your quarterback, most importantly, in a rhythm and clean plays. And, you know, because, you know, it's just like anything. When you're throwing to your primary receiver more times than not, then, you know, you're doing what you want to do. So, and I felt that drive reflected that.
Go ahead.
Mike, Ed Werner, WFAA. You mentioned the injuries on the offensive line. How did you feel about that configuration and Tyler moving outside for the first time since he was a rookie?
Can't give enough respect for Tyler Smith for just to jump out there and to play the way he did. You know, their edge pieces are, you know, that's probably the best part of their team, frankly, in my opinion. T.J. Watt, just watching it with the quarterbacks, it's not only is he a great player, he's that way every play. I mean, his consistency, just you know, just with his get off. I mean, the way he gets off on the snap of the ball. I think to play that guy on AstroTurf every week would be scarier. But so I just. You know, I felt really good about what Tyler did outside, and then, you know, and then Cam Hayward's that's a tough matchup too for, you know, for TJ and Brock, for, you know, those guys got in there. So I love the way our guys battled, and they kept me in a 50-50 mindset, which is important. So I felt like I wasn't able to throw the ball, you know, and that's just going back to, you know, Babe's question. When I can play in a rhythm and keep the quarterback in a rhythm, it's a big part of that offensive line, and they gave us that opportunity last night.
Brad,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Ed.
Defensively, as far as injuries, where's Mike, and sort of what's the plan for him this week?
He was in for treatment, so I'll have a better gauge of that Wednesday if he has a chance for Detroit. But he's got some work to do. You know, saw him, you know, Saturday before we left, but you know, we knew this week was going to be a stretch, so we'll have a better gauge once we get to Wednesday.
Brad.
Mike, Brad Sham, 105.3, the Fan. Big picture, your experience, what does a win like that under all of the circumstances possibly do for your team going forward?
Gives us confidence, but, you know, other than that, confidence to have a great week of preparation. And we've got to be better. I mean, we're not, you know, we're not ignorant weens. We're not sweeping anything under the rug. We have work to do. You know, those penalties are a problem. And, you know, we need to be better there. So we'll spend some time with, you know, on corrections with Pittsburgh. That's already blocked into the Wednesday schedule because, you know, we got to keep cleaning our own house. That's just the way we look at it, and that's important, particularly where they're happening. You know, just offensively, the red zone, you know, the red zone penalties are, you know, that's been a little bit of a crutch for us here the last couple of weeks. So we need to get that cleaned up.
Joe Tragan at WFAA TV. Coach, back on the Michael front, does a win like that yesterday allow the organization to be as conservative as they possibly can when they make the decision with Michael coming back? And secondly, can you give your outlook on Kalen Carson and how you think he'll look this week?
Yeah, I mean, Micah, I mean, I just think like anything, you know, conservative, you know, that's very fair. I just think we have to be smart there, you know, and that's where, you know, not number one, the player, because, you know, he obviously has a treatment from our medical staff, but, you know, also, you know, what they do away from here. So just make sure we're coordinated. And at the end of the day, you don't want to put anybody out there that's not ready to play. And, you know, and we also know what's in front of us, too. We have a bye week. So it'll clearly be on where he is. You know, I don't think you make exceptions for that, especially in week six. So, yeah, so we'll handle that like we always do. So, Kalen's just, he's close. You know, he was close this week. So, you know, Wednesday's practice won't be a huge indicator because just we won't do as much, but we should know by Thursday. So,
Garrett Podell, CBS Sports. Mike, what is the status of Tyler Guyton after last night, and how comfortable are you with last night's offensive line configuration if it needs to be that way going forward?
Well, definitely. I mean, yeah, that's why, you know, we got a group that we've been working with now. We got young guys that have to step up. You know, we started two rookies, but we got other young guys too. You know, I thought TJ did a nice job with his opportunities. Had some big challenges, but, you know, we got Wally. We got other guys that may have to, you know, jump in here, but they're ready. So they've all been practicing well. So, you know, once again, I think when you have injuries, I understand why you ask the questions, but, you know, every timeline's not set in the first 24 hours. That's the norm, is it takes 48 to 72 hours to kind of get this thing figured out. So, and then once you get out to practice, so, you know, our practice will be an hour and 5 minutes Wednesday as opposed to, you know, 1:40. So, you know, we'll get the information needed. But at the end of the day, you know, we're about the Lions right now. So, you know, that page has been turned, and, you know, this is what Monday is. So that's where we're, you know, we got a big challenge. We got to win a home game. You know, we used to be pretty good at home. So we got to win a home game. We've been really stressing the importance of winning on the road, and we're off to a good start. But we need to get our first home win.
Aaron Cousins, Alonso. Sorry, another injury type thing. We haven't talked to you, I don't think, since Brandon Cooks went on IR. Was that something that maybe got worse? And I know you don't want to speak too specifically about it, but do you just chalk that up to a fluke?
No, I think that's a perfect example of what I just said. I mean, you know, timelines don't, you know, you have to get all the information. So every injury is different. You know, circumstances like his are sometimes different. So you have to get all the information and make a sound decision. That's why, you know, I don't like talking about the specifics of their injuries because, like, frankly, I think that's, you know, that's their responsibility and their right to talk about the specifics of their body. But you have to wait to get all the information. That's a perfect example of, you know, why we waited and then made the decision as late as we did.
Are you comfortable with that, kind of how Flournoy looked?
I'm happy to see the young man get an opportunity. You know, so I haven't watched the special teams yet, so I want to see how he did there. But, you know, he's been working towards this. He's ready. You know, he's ready to get a little more, you know, a little more opportunities as we move forward.
Todd. I know you said you're on to all about the Lions and things, but do you ever take a big picture view of the schedule and what lies ahead over this stretch of the teams that you guys are facing and the importance of what you're about to get into?
No, I mean, I think the biggest thing is to get this win and get to the bye week, you know, and I do have a plan for the bye week based off what's coming off of that too. So, you know, as far as cutting the season up. But, yeah, it's six games in a bye week. This will be the first threshold that we need to get to.
And then Steele, how do you think he held up against Watt?
Well, I think just like anything with, you know, playing against TJ, it's, you know, you're trying to limit him. I don't think it's practical to shut down a player, you know, particularly, you know, where he plays in that defense. So, like, when he moved, he didn't line up the second play of the game, I thought, okay, now this is going to be the game. They're going to move him all over the place. So, and I was happy to see him back where he belongs. But, you know, I thought Terrence played well. I mean, that's an all-day, every snap, you know, challenge, and I thought Terrence met the challenge.
Mike, obviously we don't know who's culpable on certain plays, but like Dak's first interception, but when you look at those turnovers, the two interceptions and the fumble, how do you see Dak going about correcting those things, and what's his approach to, you know, his own evaluation?
You know, just had a chance to watch it with him earlier, so, you know, obviously the ball security on the sack is, you know, something we covered there. And, you know, and then the first one, you know, I've already talked about, you know, we thought we had them in a transition situation there and a decision. But, you know, the last one, you know, we're taking a shot there, and they were clouding the CD all day, so we were trying to get CD down the middle there, and he just trusted his feet, and I thought, when the ball came out of his hand, I thought he gave JT a good high angle ball, and JT didn't win the contest at the breaking point there, so that to me, I would classify that as a competitive, interception. I'm okay with those because. JT, he earned that right for that shot, So, I mean, you have to give your young players, we talk about giving Brandon opportunities as a young kicker. It's no different for a receiver to get that play. I mean, that's a play as a receiver that you get excited when that's called, because you've earned that opportunity to run that bang post there and go get that, that opportunity. So you have to throw him. You got to throw him on time like he did, but we got to go get that football. So. So you can't turn it over. He knows that more than anybody. I mean, that's a real credit to our football team. You talk about complimentary football, and how many times you lose a turnover ratio like we did, down three like that, and win the game. So that's a huge, huge credit to the fight and the resiliency of our football team.
Yeah, Mike, with all the injuries you've had on defense and more last night, were there a couple of guys who got a lot more opportunities to play, a lot more snaps than the usual, stood out to you?
I mean, just look the way we lined them up, six linebackers, so, all the special teams work that they played, and, just having the eight offensive line or eight defensive linemen, so the rotation there, T. Wheat, it was good to see him get out there and play and have some opportunities, really just for as limited as Marshawn played before his injury, I thought he was off to a good start. So I had a chance to see some. All those guys flashed. Yeah, so we just need to stay healthy, stay the course. Our young players are going to keep rising, and we're going to continue to get better.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
There it is, the Mike McCarthy press conference here on your home of the Cowboys. Again, Marshawn Nealand has an injured meniscus, partially torn out 4 to 6 weeks. His surgery will be tomorrow. Tomorrow as well, 9-11, a Flagtober hit with Eric Chiafalo at Lowe's on Chalk Hill Road in Dallas. You can pick up your 2024 G-Bag Whataburger flag. That's tomorrow, 9-11 with the Chief. Now, the top 10 at 420 is coming up next. Eric, where are we going?
We have a couple of different options here, but I think we have in front of me the top 10 biggest college football point spread upsets after what was a monster upsetting Saturday. And we'll do that next right here on The Fan.
Yeah, buddies, welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation. Time for the top 10 at 420. We're getting caught up here on the spots because Mike McCarthy's presser ran a little bit long for us. After starting late, it ran long, so all good. Segments brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one's been in an accident due to somebody's negligence, call the Frankels and get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Go to frankelfirm.com. It's also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. Here's the Chief of that top 10 at 420.
It was a big-time upset-filled Saturday in college football, man. I mean, Texas is your last remaining undefeated SEC team going into OU week. It's a big one. Sure is.
That's right.
Alabama, 23.5-point favorite in Vanderbilt. And, of course, they end up losing that football game. And Sean Sharif was there to see it all happen. And I was wondering how much of an upset, like historically, because when you think about just the two programs, Alabama losing to Vanderbilt, that's like a once in a lifetime kind of deal. And in fact, we actually have some sound here of Lane Kiffin, and Ole Miss loses, but they go ahead and Ole Miss is sitting there. Lane Kiffin is talking to.
They beat South Carolina. He's watching the game.
Ole Miss wins.
Yeah, and
but Lane Kiffin is watching
the Alabama game.
He's doing his post-game presser, but he's watching Alabama lose to Vanderbilt. Thank you, Broadus. And listen, he's like receiving questions, but he's not focused on it because he's seeing history take place.
How would you assess just sort of the health of your team right now?
How many timeouts does Alabama have? One left.
They had all three a few minutes ago.
They have one left, 118. Huh? Sorry, I didn't. I mean, this is like a once in a lifetime thing going on. Better watch, you're not going to see it probably ever again. What was the question?
So like he's sitting there watching it, trying to figure out what's going on there at the end of that game as Vanderbilt's able to ice it and send Alabama home. And it was a 23.5 point favorite there was Alabama. But when you look all time with the Vegas spreads and what the biggest upsets are, man, there's been some big dogs, and this one doesn't even really come all that close. I mean,
yeah, I think it's historically or culturally more relevant than, I mean, but 23, I feel like that happens maybe a couple of times a year.
Yeah, yeah, I think in the low 20s like that, that happens for sure. But you've seen like the 10th biggest upset all time is Louisiana Monroe beating Liberty, and Liberty was a 32.5 point favorite. You've had the Appalachian State Mountaineers beating Michigan, and Michigan was a 33-point favorite. You had James Madison beating Virginia Tech in 2010, and Virginia Tech was a 33.5-point favorite. Ooh. Liberty beat Baylor in 2017, and Baylor was a 34-point favorite. Central Michigan beat Western Michigan. That was a 34.5-point spread. Texas State beat Houston in 2012, Texas State was a 35-point dog in that game.
Bang.
1998, you had Temple over Virginia Tech, 35.5-point spread. Ooh. 2007, Syracuse over Louisville, 37-point spread. 2007, Stanford Cardinals over USC, 40.5-point spread. That was Jim Harbaugh as the head coach there for Stanford. And then number one, the biggest upset all-time college football, 2017, it was Howard beating UNLV, 45.5-point spread.
Got him.
So this, just to put it into context, it is crazy with the programs, just Bama never really ever losing to Vanderbilt. But from a spread standpoint, it wasn't that shocking of an upset, I guess.
Vanderbilt was 0-60 against top five opponents.
All time?
All time.
Never beaten a top five opponent?
Yeah.
0-60. So now they're 1-60 all time versus top five opponents.
Do they have something going here? I mean, the quarterback and coach are talking about like this is the beginning of a
God, I hope
more
not. They play
win.
LSU here in a few weeks. Dave.
They just play spoiler all season.
I want to say these guys lost to like Georgia Southern or somebody like that, Georgia State, like Vanderbilt, and then so you know this year they're 3-2 now, but they've tried. I mean, they matter of fact that you know Clark Lee, the coach there, he was talking about a total reset, like the program, like everything that they were going and doing was not going the right way, and he just said he was on the point of maybe just kind of hitting the whole reset button for this thing, but they get a win. They get a big win. That's, like I say, it's the biggest win in the history of Vanderbilt football right there.
Oh, no question.
So
yeah, they storm the field. So, they're ripping the goalposts out. They're carrying them down the street. They got it out of the stadium. It was crazy.
They played as well as you can imagine to play Alabama, being outmanned the way they... If Alabama would have got the ball back, it would have been a heartbreak for Vanderbilt.
But that's why it's a big credit to Vanderbilt, because it wasn't even like some fluky, lucky situation.
They killed the last 250 of that game. I mean, it was beautiful how they did it.
Very difficult to do.
Yep.
Bama couldn't get their defense off the field, man.
Yep,
so
for sure.
Huge win for Vandy, and we'll hit some more in the Darty here.
Thank you very much, Chief. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. More Cowboys content coming up here before too long on a victorious Cowboys Monday. But as the Chief said, we absolutely must take a pause for the cause and observe some of the greatness of college football over the weekend. Of course, two guys, one booth coming up at 6:20, an audio celebration of Cowboys game day. And we're back with that college football stuff here on The Fan. Thank you very much, Lucius. Wolchuk's out today. He's on his way back from Pittsburgh. He enjoyed the Steelers and Cowboys game last night. Tomorrow, 9 to 11, a Flagtober hit with the Chief at Lowe's on Chalk Hill Road in Dallas. That's 30 and Cockrell Hill, if you're wondering what the area is. Here's Eric now with a little college football darty.
Yes, sir. Yeah, looking forward to tomorrow, man. It'll be free breakfast, Whataburger flags, hanging out from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Lowe's West Dallas, 1710 Chalk Hill Road. Going to be a great time. All right, I know one of the big exciting moments from the football weekend for Broaddus was his Eli Drinkwitz Missouri Tigers getting absolutely
boat
dominated
raced.
By the Aggies.
A&M's kind of an underrated team right now, I believe.
You think they're on the come up?
Yeah, I do.
It looks like we might be in for a collision course the last game of the season, Texas and Texas A&M.
Could be a very, very big game.
Very, very big
very
game.
Very big game. The man, the SEC West is really up for grabs, you know, with the Alabama loss and all that.
Oh, it is,
it's completely up for grabs, and I don't think A&M gets nearly enough credit, but I was glad to see them. I was glad to see them do well in this game. I mean, Missouri, I thought there was some disrespect from Missouri, you know, with the quarterback talking about he'd never played. You know, he goes, the practice field was louder than Kyle Field. And
yeah,
I'm like,
oh, bulletin board material. Yeah. You're going to get yourself in trouble
Then I think Eli, they had their receiver. Your receiver had an A&M blanket. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I did see that. So there was a Texas A&M corner, Will Lee III. He's nicknamed the blanket. And it was alleged that he sent a blanket with a note to Missouri's wide receiver, Theo Weiss Jr., ahead of their game on Saturday. And Theo Weiss actually pulled up to the game wearing that blanket. But he had, I know he had no catches in the first half. Not sure if he ended up with a catch on the day. But it was somewhat of a ball sacking because it wasn't actually the A&M corner nicknamed the blanket. It wasn't him who actually sent the blanket and the note pregame, get used to this blanket. It will be real tomorrow. It was actually just some random rabid Aggie fan, I guess, who put that in the hotel room of Theo. When I first saw it, I was like, wow, this is one of the coolest trash-talking things I've ever seen in my life. And it still is pretty cool. Never seen this done before, but it wasn't the Aggie player who did it. It must have just been a crazy Aggie fan who did that. But, yeah, that was a fun storyline. It's always fun during the A&M games to just follow their TAMU police on Twitter.
Gold.
Because you just see some funny stuff. And the one that took off was the tweet from the game where the Aggie police say that they responded to an intoxicated subject, Section 232, released to sober wife and ejected. Hashtag BTHO Missouri. And everybody's like, man, that is the worst thing that anybody would want to have happen to them, having to be released to sober wife.
Oh, yes. Anything, you know, but that. Just like, take me to jail, sir.
Yeah, dude.
You can see the look of disappointment on her face already.
Yeah, you do not want to be that guy. Aggies getting a big victory, and not many in the SEC can say that after this football weekend. First day, multiple AP top five SEC teams lost to unranked opponents ever. Yeah. That happened on Saturday. And, it is Texas as the last standing undefeated team in the SEC. It's only week six.
Oh, well,
man.
Well.
And this is where we are. So
perfectly timed.
Yeah, oh, perfectly timed. Now we have a monster matchup with Texas OU right here at the Cotton Bowl, and we'll be building it up all week long here on the Fan, so I'm looking forward to that for sure. USC losing. Lincoln Riley 22-10 through 32 games. Clay Helton was 23-9 through 32 games.
Hmm.
Things not looking great for Lincoln Riley right now. Lincoln Riley's lost 7 of his last 12 games. So he's not on the type of run that you would want to see as a USC fan. And I wonder if there's even a chance, like, I'm sure it could spiral out of control in a way that has him not keeping his job at the end of the season. But I just wonder how bad it has to get for Lincoln Riley to get fired.
Capped midseason.
Yeah. Or just to not return as the head coach for next season.
There has to be
a lot. They have so much into that dude.
Yeah, but there has to be so much of a huge buyout for this guy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, financially,
I mean, USC is now in the, of course, in the Big Ten, but just huge buyout numbers, and some teams are willing to do that. I know LSU, we were okay like giving Coach O what $18 million to kind of walk away, and I'm sure that Lincoln Riley's number is even bigger than that, maybe double that.
Probably need to be looking at a check to your current guy, don't you? I think all schools that are serious about this have to be ready to give tens of millions of dollars to the coach to go away as soon as it becomes obvious. And I think in the transfer portal, the NIL, if you can't get it done in 3 years, we don't need to see anymore, right? I think a lot of people assumed Lincoln Riley would bring USC back to prominence, but it's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, it should have been.
They've been so bad on defense, though. I mean, that's been a big, big problem.
That's been their huge issue.
Yeah.
You have Caleb Williams, the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
He's the number one pick in the draft, best quarterback in the country, and you're winning seven games with him.
Right.
That should have been, that should really be enough to be like, okay, you what are we really doing here? If you can't win more than seven games with this guy, then yeah. you have some serious issues with yeah. your roster.
I mean, what that's always been about, and I know recruiting is important all over the country, especially in this era, but it's about can you keep Oregon out of Los Angeles? And with Phil Knight getting hungry to get the job done before he moves on, he's throwing around a lot of money. And,
yeah.
you know, I don't know if any coach can get it right if your entire university isn't obsessed with winning.
We got a big matchup this weekend. Isn't Oregon hosting Ohio State?
Yes. Oh, I mean, this upcoming weekend of college football is about to be, it's one of the bigger ones. I think we LSU. Got back-to-back weekends that are popping here. But you have Ohio State at Oregon.
Right.
You have Penn State at USC. You have Texas OU, of course, and you have Ole Miss and LSU.
Yeah.
So those are huge games right there. For sure. But yeah, that first Big Ten matchup between Ohio State and Oregon, that one at Oregon, that's going to be a ton of fun.
Matter of fact, Oregon did when they were in the Pac-12, they traveled to the Shoe and did beat, I think that was Mario Cristobal, one of his big signature wins at Oregon before he left.
He took the Ducks to beat the
Bucks?
He took
the Ducks to the Shoe and beat the Bucks on a week one or week two matchup one time.
I don't even remember that. That's pretty impressive.
2011?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's been a little while.
Was it that long ago?
Jeez, was that Marcus Mariota?
2011 in the Shoe. Yes, Ducks win 35-28.
And God, then, was that long ago,
it's
huh?
It's crazy, dude.
2014-2015, they played in Arlington as well. They played it over there at the stadium.
The stadium.
One of those preseason deals. Or no, that was a playoff game. And then, of course, they played in the Rose Bowl back in 2009.
So you had, here's a stat for you. Alabama defense had allowed 11 third down conversions over the first four games this season. Vandy converted 12 of 18 third downs on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I didn't actually fact check this one, but I'd like to think it's true. Vanderbilt scored 13 points against Alabama during the entire Nick Saban era.
This is
holy cow.
I did see that.
What?
That tweet. So I'll say I saw the tweet. Yeah. They had a David Hillman is always funny with these college football tweets. And there was one, he had a picture of this Vanderbilt student and they showed the scoreboard. And this Vanderbilt student's just sitting by himself and it's Alabama 54, Vanderbilt nothing. And Hillman goes, "This one's for you, bro."
Wow.
I love it.
Well, I wonder if that Alabama fan in our audience that called a couple of weeks ago to rip me a new one is in the listening audience.
Yeah,
can't imagine that he is. You know, I'd imagine on a day like this, you're ducking for cover.
No question.
But
Matt Pittman is a big Alabama fan.
Yeah, you know, and it hurts.
I didn't want to. I'm not. You know what? You'll throw the stones at a glass house because LSU's got to play Alabama here a little
bit.
Yeah,
you guys will take that L.
All I think about now is Alabama is just like really totally upset. That was the one. Now, you know, that's the one bad game that they're going to have, and they're just going to go on a run now.
There's only one program I've seen be able to turn over from legendary coaches to just a guy that you hadn't heard of, and it's Ohio State. For everybody else, you know, reality's coming for you. When your legend leaves, it's over, you know, and you got to find your next legend.
Tennessee took a bad L as well against Arkansas. That was another storm the field situation. The Arkansas defense came to play, and the quarterback, Nico, for Tennessee, I mean, as time's expiring, he's just running out of bounds. He doesn't even give his team a chance
to try
and catch a touchdown there at the end to save it and win it. And there was a Michigan fan who promised that he was going to eat something disgusting once again upon Michigan losing to Washington. Of course, Michigan loses to Washington, and now this dude's running away from it and perhaps placed an FS Poo-style curse on the Michigan program, so we'll continue to monitor that.
Don't do it. You don't want to do that to yourself and or your team.
I'll tell you what. I think it was the kid's name is Talen Green, the quarterback at Arkansas. When he got hurt, I thought that Arkansas was done.
Yeah,
you know, and they throw in another quarterback. I'm thinking like
magic happened.
No, it wasn't magic. It was like
defense grinding it out.
Defense is really what it was. Arkansas's defense really came to play, but this Green's a very, very talented talented kid. We'll see if he's available here this week, but he took a pretty nasty shot to the knee.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. All right. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll hit the expressway. We'll get you caught up on everything involving the Cowboys at 5:30, Krusty's Corner Part 2.
Defense. We'll talk about the defense.
Yeah, the defensive corner there, looking at your Cowboys in the game film. He's the first of the film every week. He'll stand and deliver. But in addition to the finest is coming up, Eric, what's in store?
Yes, sir. We got some more takeaways from the football Sunday. We got some Cowboys nuggets. We have injury updates from around the league as well. And that is all coming up next in the finest.